Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Parenting Hour. You're tuned into UNICEF M93.5 here in the hearts of the West Midlands in city of Birmingham, the bright, active and energetic city of Birmingham and the West Midlands. And also welcome to our listeners that are tuned into us down in Milton Keynes and Luton and 105.1. We have a live session here with you this evening, so please do ring us in and join in the conversation on 0121 772 8892. That's 0121 772 8892. The people, the managers are in the studio, the phone lines are on, they're ready at their emails as well. If you want to email, it's info@unityfm.net. And we would like to have a really good conversation, interactive conversation, and get you involved this evening in how you can change things for the next generation in regards to our planet, in regards to the crisis we're talking about there now, the emergency crisis. It actually is an emergency crisis. And people are waking up, I think, more and more. Not our guest, because she's been active for many years on this. But recently, I've seen messages from lots of other organizations and people that are really interested and knowing what can we do. It's not too late. Come, let's do something now, because we do need to act now. I've been intrigued watching some TV programs about the ice melting and the poles and how that's affecting our environment. And there's a lot more happening. And of course, our guest is going to tell us all about this, what's happening and what are the causes and why we need to be proactive and proactive now. We cannot be reactive anymore. It is too late to be reactive. So with that, let me welcome Joe Hindley.
Joe, hello.
Hello, Joe. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Kathleen.
I was just going to say, Joe, that people might hear your voice and be thinking, oh, I know that voice. This is often due to talking about babies and birth and antenatal and postnatal issues and home birth, because you've been on the show many times before, but they may not always have heard you in this respect.
No, I haven't been very public in this respect until more recently, and I'm still trying to find my way, trying to find my voice on this area, because you know, it's I've been quite conversant about all about birth and all that sort of thing, but this has become the issue that I really feel I need to talk and share with people about now.
And so right too. Can you tell us a bit about why we need to be talking about this now? Because just imagine there's people tuned in this evening that have never heard anything before, never thought about the climate, getting on with their daily life, busy with their kids, don't have time to watch TV or read a newspaper, and this is the first time that they're listening to something.
Yes, well, I just wanted to pick up immediately on your intro, really, which is a really good lead in, and absolutely all those things. You know, everybody's very busy just with day-to-day managing and survival, you know, getting their food on the table, and, you know, especially after the pandemic, so many people have been affected so awful, terribly, with loss of loved ones and all the rest. And just getting through the pandemic has been, well, and still it's ongoing, so many people who are ill and sick. But just, you know, you're saying for the next generation, well, you know, the really disturbing and alarming thing, and this is, you know, bringing together my role as a midwife, is we could be the last generation. So, you know, this is, we think about our children and our children's children, but in reality, the state of the world at the moment and of the planet and the way that we're living means that this could well be the end of life as we know it on Earth. So it's absolutely pressing beyond any sort of comparison and the urgency of our situation. And sadly, it could well be that it's an impossible situation, that we're already past the tipping points for so many of the things that are happening with the ice melting and sea rising and the forests all burning, that we may have passed the point of no return, that we can't stop it. But that's not to say that we shouldn't act and act now to do what we can, because we need to try to mitigate the extremities of what can happen. So, you know, the environment has, you know, been something lovely, you know, to watch on television, David Attenborough, Life on Earth, lovely animal programs, and, you know, thinking, oh, how lovely, how beautiful. But actually, you know, the situation, as David Attenborough himself has highlighted to us over his recent programs, is dire. And, you know, of all those lovely wild animals that he shows us on the programs, in fact, some incredible number, sort of, I think it's 96% of all animals on Earth are not wild animals. They are pigs and cows and sheep. We're lost all the wild animals, and the birds, most of the birds that we have on the planet at the moment are chickens, are poultry. Most of our species of birds we have lost because of our appetites for eating meat. And so it's not just our own possible last generation. We're talking about life on Earth and species going extinct. We're living through the sixth mass extinction on the planet Earth. There have been five times previously on the planet Earth when there's been a mass extinction of life on Earth. And one of the most serious of those, there was 98% of all life on Earth was lost. And the tragedy of it is we could well be heading for that.
Wow, wow. Are we ready for that? You know, I'm listening here, 5 p.m. on Tuesday evening, early September 2021.
Oh,
is this...
I'm sorry, breaking this through to you if you haven't heard it. And this is the tragedy and the dreadful thing, that the truth is not and has not been being told. We have not been hearing about this on our news. And that's despite the fact that the United Nations... the beginning of last month has published, and it was their second really serious report they published, the previous one 4 years ago, but they published the International Panel on Climate Change's report, which is documenting all the scientific evidence about climate change and saying it's code red for humanity. Now that hit the headline maybe for a day, but it's not hitting the headlines every day, although the BBC is getting better, but it's still not to the fore there with every newsreel. We're hearing about a lot of terrible severe weather events that are happening, and you know, it's just keeping our finger on the pulse of our planet, of what's happening, that this is what's happening. Things that were once in a lifetime severe weather events are seemingly happening, well, every year, every week at the moment, we're seeing, aren't we? Terrible things happening around our Earth.
Absolutely. And food chains, as you say, have been disturbed because for whatever reason, either the fires or whether it's just the ice melts, that something affects a food chain down the line. And we know one little, where it starts small, but it goes big like this, then after that, the effects of that. It's great the way you bring in your medical knowledge into this, because, you know, when you said your finger is on the pulse, and we've done the diagnosis, really. But we haven't done or started the treatment. We haven't even tested or piloted any of the treatment, really, when we're talking about it. There's a little bit here and there. I suppose there's electric cars and things which we can talk about. But it's not, we're not, like if you were in a hospital, you would have, I'm putting it relate to a patient, maybe you diagnose a problem or an illness, or like even COVID, you have a group of people coming together, experts coming together and working quickly on that to then treat the problem, put process in place, put strategies in place, put things in place. Do you think that's happening now at the moment? Like if we replicate that within government, within councils, within the leaders of our countries?
Unfortunately not. No, I don't think it is happening. In a few countries around the world, there are creative things happening. I would particularly cite countries that are prioritizing well-being as their measure of success, performance over GDP, over money making. New Zealand, Iceland, some other countries as well have been championing this as a way forward, where they see that, you know, people's health and well-being, and actually the physical environment's health and well-being has not been being cared for by big business and by GDP. So, you know, those are hopeful measures. And there's a petition circulating at the moment to say, come on, we need to do this here. Because unfortunately, our politics is driven by short-term goals, and it's very much in cahoots with big oil, big business, and big capitalism. And it's that sort of big business that's actually destroying us and killing us and killing people now already. You're right. Yes, as healthcare professionals, there's a real, you know, I feel a real sense of urgency about this, and not me alone. I don't know if people saw in London over the last couple of weeks ago, there was Extinction Rebellion. We're very active in London, trying to highlight the issues, especially the role of the City of London and this, you know, the Bank of England and the banks, absolutely how they are financing and underwriting coal, oil and gas investment, and not just current projects but new exploration and projects that are releasing more CO2 in the atmosphere. And one of the biggest investment banks, JP Morgan, who's like since the Paris Agreement of 2016, when there were accords agreed to reduce carbon investment, fossil fuel investment, they've invested £317 billion in coal, oil and gas. So it was actually a focus of an action taken by doctors and other healthcare professionals of Extinction Rebellion. And you can see the reports of that action in The Guardian and in The Independent, where doctors and healthcare professionals had a die-in outside JP Morgan to highlight this extreme, investing in our complete destruction, and the consequences of that for vulnerable communities, especially children. And it's ironic that in the same week as pretty much the same week as the United Nations report and this, you know, this action, we were focusing on the UNICEF, UNICEF report that came out of the UN, just saying that 2.2 children in the world are at extremely high risk from impacts of climate change and air pollution at this moment. And in 33 countries around the world, over 1 billion children are at risk of about 3 to 4 impacts simultaneously. So it is just, it's extreme. So if we were in the emergency room at a hospital, the alarms are all ringing, and, you know, we are... It really is the most extreme situation of the planet. In fact, at this rebellion in London, there was a very creative group of people from Worcester who were dressed up. I mean, we were genuine medics and healthcare professionals outside JP Morgan, but this group from Worcester were imaginary planetary medics, and they had a world that they had painted, and a big great globe they were carrying around on a stretcher, and they had sort of resuscitation, sort of a jump leads to resuscitate this poor old globe who they were acting out with their performance protest that the globe is sick.
Wow, it's a good analogy, and it's a good, I can have that picture in my head now. What were they, or what would you have, if you had the choice, or if you were there being a decision maker on that emergency trolley, and who would you have with you, around you, as part of that emergency team? So the team and the trolley to resuscitate the environment.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, as a midwife, my angle of things has very much been not the emergency room, but sort of prevention in the first place. So, you know, about, you know, health promotion and healthcare, keeping healthy, because my job as midwife has been looking after women having their babies. And, you know, some midwives work in delivery suite and in intensive care, you know, when things have gone wrong, looking after women where they've had really traumatic experiences of childbirth and stuff. But I've been with the home birth team, as I've talked about so much. So, you know, my big thing has been keeping things normal and averting emergencies. So in that, some ways, that's why I'm jumping up and down so much, saying, you know, we need to, you know, we needed to have acted 50 years ago, actually, but, you know, we need to act now. But in terms of the emergency room and what we do, the evidence is out there, and there are very, very practical. And you know, they appeal to me as midwife because they're straightforward, basic, not high-tech things that need to be done. Interestingly, I mean, people may well have been affected by some of the demonstrators who were blocking the roads around the M25 yesterday, protesting for Insulate Britain. Now, you know, it's controversial, that form of action and how it impacts on people, but you know what they're protesting for, as the LBC radio person James O'Brien reported, they are right. The protest is relevant, it's absolutely essential, it's important, it's inconveniencing people and, you know, causing major disruption, but the action needs to be taken. And I think the ironic and sort of you know, the sort of shocking aspect of that action is that their demand is so basic. The demand is insulate homes, insulate Britain. And it's like, why is the government not doing that? Why have we not been doing that? It's like, come on, we need to, that's one of the most practical things that could make a massive, massive difference. I've got a few statistics, if I can find them here. I'm not that good at statistics. I've done quite well so far with saying a few things to you. But, you know, we've got...
I'm glued to you at the moment, indeed.
Here we are.
And here our listeners are as well. Listeners, yes. Let us have the opportunity to remind you of the phone number again to join the conversation. It's 0121-772-8892. Please do ring in and tell us, have you changed? Have you done anything different in the last few weeks when you've heard about Extinction Rebellion or other environmental things that are happening? And have you thought about your life and what you're doing differently? So please do ring in and let us know. Sorry, Jo. Yes, you were saying.
Oh, I found it here. There's a thing called Households Declare. And the statistic is that 20%, that's about a fifth of the total emissions of carbon CO2 emissions in the UK, come from our 29 million homes that are heated by gas boilers that emit carbon dioxide. So, you know, if we were to insulate those homes, it's very basic. And, you know, maybe we need to insulate a million a year. It would make it take us 29 years. But, you know, we need to be on it starting now to make our homes efficient. At the moment, so many people are suffering fuel poverty. They're having to choose in the wintertime between heating their home or buying food. And in the summertime, our temperatures here are getting more extreme and our homes are getting too hot. And air conditioning isn't the answer. It's just that creates more CO2, which makes the situation worse. I don't know if people saw on the news yesterday, obviously this was reported, the Insulate Britain thing then, but just before it, there was footage from Karachi showing the experience of people in Karachi yesterday, where they're experiencing extreme heat and just how unbearable it is living in that extreme heat. Now, I've been participating with you, Kathleen, on the WhatsApp support groups for pregnant and postnatal women through COVID, supporting them with their anxieties and concerns. You know, even like this summer we've had here, so many women worrying about their babies, they're too hot, when it's too hot and how to keep them cool. And there's footage of a poor woman in Karachi, just how to keep her babies cool, this heat is unbearable. And unfortunately, you know, this extreme heat is already impacting Nigeria, India, Pakistan, Karachi, sub-Saharan Africa, some parts of the world are not just becoming inhospitable areas to live, but actually uninhabitable. And so that's meaning that thousands, millions of people are going to be on the move because they cannot stay where they have lived for generations. So insulate our homes, that's a basic thing we can do.
So number one, that's a really good point. And it's, you know, it's something that we can all do and think of, or even think if we're turning on the heating, do I need it that high? Can I make it a degree less? Because I'm sure we can. Can I put on a jumper?
Yeah.
We're not putting on heating to go around in T-shirts.
Yes. The thing is, though, I think, and this is the upsetting aspect of it, is over all these years, and still there's a sort of, there's a very, almost playing with our minds way in which these things have been talked about, where it's been turned around and put on individuals as it being an individual responsibility. So, you know, saying, come on, insulate your home. Well, why should people who can't afford to insulate their home be being told that? It's the role of our government is to look after us and to invest in things that will make, you know, make our lives tolerable and possible. And so it's a role, I'd say, of government here to make it possible for people to, they, people shouldn't have to finance this themselves. It needs to be financed centrally by government. And it shouldn't just be a something that people dabble in. Oh, you know, I've put in double glazing or triple glazing, but it needs to be comprehensive across the board for people to all be able to do this properly. So that's just one example. And then, you know, sort of, I think that there is tremendous expertise. Well, people need to be educated about the issues in the first place so that they can get together. And this has been one of the things that's been promoted is for people to be involved, to make their own decisions about what needs to be done through perhaps citizens' assemblies, that sort of thing. You know, sort of, about transport, you've mentioned about electric cars, but really we need to be looking at basic transport provision for all. People shouldn't be having to fork out for massive electric cars. What about free public transport for all, free buses, free train travel, or, you know, some basic things that again will allow people to manage their lives and get cars off the road, and to decarbonize our train system, you know, and how these things are led. I think one of the things that's difficult is that there's been a lot of hype about new technologies that are coming down the line that will save us all. And if only we can sort of, you know, get these new technologies, they will save us, make all the difference. But actually, the basic things we have at our fingertips already, we need to do, but we need to do them now. We need to reduce, not reduce, but yeah, drop to zero our emissions overnight to make the difference we need, because we're already looking at we're already at 1.2 degrees of warming, and we're looking at over 2 degrees of warming the way that things are going, which is serious.
Very serious indeed. Very
so serious. Yes, we, you know, we need to, these are things. And then also, I mean, about our diets, we need to change our habits radically, because the factory farming that produces the meat and the food that we're eating is a massive emitter of carbon dioxide. So they're very challenging things. People don't like changing their habits. I've taken a long time. I'm pretty much vegan now, but you know, still eat occasional bits of cheese. I do like a bit of cheese, but I'm very just making much more conscious all my choices at every twist and turn. But again, it's about incentivizing these habit changes with leadership with example. We made the changes. I think one of the most inspiring things that we've had over the last, I can't remember when it was it a decade ago when we banned smoking in public places? Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just, we couldn't have imagined prior to that that change could have been brought about.
Exactly.
And that was
exactly. And if it was, and everybody spoke about it, that it would never work, it would never happen, how could this happen? And it has. You know, I remember traveling on airplanes where you had your smoking zone and your non-smoking zone.
Yeah.
How did we survive? You know, because even in the non-smoking zone, you still had the smoke coming over you. But it has changed, and we've changed so much in this time. We're coming into a commercial break. We've only got a few seconds left. So listeners, please do tune into us after the commercial break. Do ring in. Do join in the conversation. Our number again is 0121-772-8892. Jo is here with me for the next half an hour. You can see how she's full of knowledge. And let us see what else we can put on the crash chart, inshallah, in the next break, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.